This past Thursday, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I awoke with a start. I don't know why I awoke, but it really, really surprised me. I can count the number of times on one hand when I have not slept through the night. Yeah, I know, that's good, isn't it? But I was surprised. There I was, awake. So I made myself a glass of warm milk, and I drank it down, and I lay on the couch, and soon enough I was asleep again. Simple. The next morning, I had to drive Irene to the airport, and on the way she asked me, "Well, John, why do you think that you woke up in the middle of the night?" And I said, "I'm not sure. Maybe I'm worried. Worried about finding people for the art show. Or maybe I'm worried about the strategic plan. Or maybe I'm worried about my kids finding work. Or maybe I'm worried about this week's annual staff meeting to plan the coming year." And so I was thinking of the reasons why maybe I wasn't sleeping so well, and as I was doing that, I was also grumbling about the traffic, because it was very, very slow at the 401-409 interchange. "Darn it," I said. "Darn it." And that's putting it lightly. So Irene said to me, "John, don't be so uptight. Just relax, relax." Well, then I mentioned to Irene, "But Irene, you're going to Florida, but I have a sermon to write today too, so I have a right to be irritated by how this traffic is just eating up my day. Darn," I said again, "darn." And Irene said, "Stop it. I mean it. Don't be so uptight. You'll sleep better. Come on." And I thought to myself, Irene is nagging me. So I was even more irritated, and I said, "How about some empathy, dear, please? I mean, you can't just turn irritation off and on like that. I need some time now. I need some sympathy. I need some empathy to help me get over it. Stop nagging me." And like the angel she is, she did. She stopped nagging me. But, oh, I hate being nagged. And you probably hate it, too. Which is actually why I sometimes find reading the Sermon on the Mount to be such a pain. It comes across to me as one long, very big nag. I mean, just listen to it. Before this morning's text, the few lines that Sandra read, it says, "Blessed are the meek," that is, don't you dare be a pushover. "Blessed are the pure in heart," which means, make sure that every thought you have is loving. "Blessed are those who mourn," which means, well, make sadness a habit. And then after our text, it just goes on. "Don't be angry." Well, that's impossible. "Don't look at another person lustfully or you will have committed adultery." Well, I guess like Jimmy Carter then, I'm guilty, sorry. "Don't seek an eye for an eye, but turn the other cheek." "Don't worry." "Give the coat off your back." "Pray, forgive." "Seek first the kingdom." "Be perfect," says Jesus, "as your heavenly Father is perfect." The Sermon on the Mount just never seems to stop. Nag, nag, nag. Divine nagging. And one of the biggest challenges that I face as a preacher is avoiding just this kind of nagging from the pulpit. I mean, who wants to come to church and be nagged every week? But then today, from my Epiphany 2 text, taken from the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, In the middle of all this divine nagging, there are these words: you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the earth. So, obviously, the theme of this sermon ought to be good. Be good. Come on, be good. You know, be light and salt. The way United Church of Canada people are supposed to be light and salt. You know, seek social justice. Save the environment. Fight Israeli occupation of Palestine. Reconcile with the First Nation. Struggle against racism. Seek economic equity. Nag, nag, nag. Is that what church is all about? Nag, nag, holy nag. I have actually preached on this theme before about the dangers of equating Christianity with some kind of ongoing moral nagging. But then Sunday comes and I nag you anyways, almost every week. It's a real trap for preachers. It's a real trap for Christians. I can hardly avoid it. But nagging isn't any fun. So what's the solution? Is there an antidote for nagging? Actually, I think there are. I can think of 10 pieces to this antidote, at least. But here's the problem. When I was a professor of preaching, I always nagged my students about how they should never shape their sermons as lists of 10. I said to them, look, if you're preaching to a congregation, no one is going to leave that sanctuary remembering even 2 things. Why would you go to them with a list of 10? But in the spirit of wanting to offer a full-bodied antidote to holy nagging, this morning, for once in my career, I offer a prescription of 10 pills. And the sheet that I made sure you all have is a guide. Forgive the ripped edges. Allison was ill on Friday, so I had to do it myself. Maybe you want to take the list home and put it on your fridge to remind you this week to maybe remember a few of these. You can add some notes if you want, but here goes. Here are my 10 quick antidotes that I came up with that are an antidote for those who either nag too much or who believe they are nagged in church too much. So, 10 antidotes. First, celebrate. Instead of feeling bad every time you do something wrong, celebrate your successes. Did you shovel snow for an elderly neighbor? Did you hold your tongue with a child? Did you sign up to make a monthly contribution to the food bank? Well, celebrate. Have a cigar or a cup of licorice tea. Note your good deed in a diary. Tell your spouse. Unless you learn to associate doing good with celebration, doing good will feel always like a chore. Second, grace. We're Christians. We claim to live by grace, which generally is taken to mean that when we have nothing to celebrate, we count on the divine to forgive us as we forgive others. Even when we don't deserve such forgiveness and actually deserve to be nagged instead. Live in that grace. Third, exercise. I walk my dog Jex for an hour every day except Sundays. It isn't always fun, but it kind of keeps my blood pressure down and my muscles mostly spry. But we can exercise our spirits, too, by making a habit of doing some daily good instead of merely doing occasional random acts of kindness. The more we exercise our good, the more likely our good will be strong and the less likely we will need to be nagged. 4, adventure. Remember, life should be an adventure, so do good for the thrill of it, for the good, for the hope you give people that you will meet along the way, for the healing and happiness you will see in them, for the political and business cultures that only you can change in your office, for the surprises that will overtake you when others notice your good. Doing good should be an adventure, a refusal to sit on your laurels and an insistence on making someone's day instead. You see, no one on an adventure needs to be nagged to press on to the goal. Community, that's 5. In the first place, be part of one. When your energy for good flags, as it will, in communities, there's always someone to pick up the slack. When you fail, there's always someone to embrace you anyway. Communities get it done together so that it doesn't always depend on you. Community 2. Build our community, and now I'm talking about the United Church of Canada. Whether it comes to admitting our guilt with respect to residential schools, or getting it right first in Canada when it comes to gay rights, or working hard to alleviate poverty in our cities, Canada actually really needs churches, denominations like ours. So instead of feeling bad and nagged in your little corner for what you have not accomplished, lend a hand in making the United Church's national witness strong, a light set on the hill or the escarpment or in the Rockies. And the good news is, the more we give to our United Church community in terms of our energy and encouragement, the more Canada gets and the more we all get back too. 7, compromise. The evil at the root of nearly all nagging is the presumption that everyone has to do it my way, or that you have to do it the way everybody else seems to be doing it. In that way, nagging is absolute. Nagging is for all time. Nagging is legalistic. It's black and white with respect to what is good. And as dangerous as bumping into a hard-edged granite countertop if you're a kid at just the right height. I say, forget all that. Offer and accept compromises. Meet people halfway. Compromise isn't failure. Compromise is a way of moving ahead together at a speed we can all manage. 8. Be picky. Irene learned early on in her career that if she offered every kind of counseling imaginable, her potential clients would view her as a jack of all trades who was expert in none. Potential clients wouldn't pick up the phone to call her. So Irene became picky about which client she would take on, by focusing on couples therapy and nothing else. She became an expert. Her focused advertising brought in lots of leads and her business flourished. When it comes to her counseling or any other good, people are less likely actually to nag those that they perceive of as experts. So do good, but be picky about the good you focus on. It's okay to have a focus. No one can do it all. 9, love yourself. We're supposed to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. So doing good for our neighbors requires that we exercise supreme kindness towards ourselves first, that we love ourselves. Generous self-love is an antidote to the feelings of low self-esteem and defeat that constant nagging invite. And 10, fertilize. You heard me say it. In ancient Israel, salt was a fertilizer for that region's alkaline soils, as it still is in that part of the world today. To be the salt of the world is to help people grow, to help them become fully human. You do this by blessing them, by fertilizing them with thanks and congratulation. Nagging, by way of contrast, is a poison that brings people down while rarely convincing them that they do actually need to change their ways. So whether you're a boss at work, or a mom or a dad, or a teacher, or a card player teaching someone how to properly bid, grow. Grow the people that you're with. Build them up. Don't nag. That's it. Those are my 10 commandments for building a nag-free world, 10 actions that can serve as antidotes to both nagging and being the subject of nagging. I know that when I offer all this to you as a list of to-dos, the list itself feels like it might be a nag. What can I say? You're half right. Though one of the problems with nagging, of course, is constant repetition, endless repetition. So, I promise, I'll only give you this list once, and then it's not really nagging, right? Amen.